Let me have you turn to Isaiah chapter 50 and verse 4. I'll come back to that. The Lord God hath given me the tongue of the learned, that I should know how to speak a word in season to him that is weary. He wakeneth morning by morning. He wakeneth mine ear to hear as the learned. That last phrase, I think we often overlook in that verse. He wakeneth mine ear to hear as the learned. I teach Algebra 1 this year, have for several years. It's the period right after lunch. One of the reasons I pastor is to stay awake in church. But I'll tell you, that period right after lunch is the challenge of the day. And Algebra 1, so I have to sell them on why they're in there, how it's going to help them in real life, why they should pay attention, why they should become expert Algebra 1 students, etc. So how do we do that? How do we build and maintain rapport with our students? Because if you have some rapport with your students, you're building some interest, aren't they going to do a bit better than they would have? I think so. Now, the A student, he may or she may pull it out just because they've got plenty of native intelligence. But students need to be interested in the subject. They need to know that it's important what they're learning. Look at that last phrase of Isaiah 50, verse 4. He wakeneth mine ear to hear as the learned. One of the things that I like about Algebra 1 is it's logical. There's a progression of steps. Sometimes a student's, I've got one right now, he's just a smart kid, and he can figure out other ways to work it. And I don't want to discourage him, but I say, listen, you need, if you learn this way, because you're dealing with some easy problems. Well, he didn't want to take my word for it, so I gave him a harder one. And his kind of intuitive way of working it out just didn't work too well because he didn't have the foundational step-by-step process of solving it. And so then he started to trust me a little more. And one of the little sayings in class that I do a lot of review as we cover concepts. How do we solve this equation? Well, we multiply by the inverse. He would want to say divide. I say, no, a lot of textbooks will have you divide, but if you learn to multiply by the multiplicative inverse, you're going to understand as you get into higher mathematics why that's really important to learn that, not just divide both sides by the same number. So you do things by multiplication, and then you start with addition rather than subtraction, and so on and so forth. So we review that all along the way. Let me read the introduction to us, and we'll jump into this. If God called us to teach, he called us to invest in and desire to see growth in the lives of our students. We know that's not all about academics. That's just a byproduct of learning how to live and live the way God would have us to. I want you to think for a minute. I'll take some responses. What teacher motivated you in school? I'm not so much interested in their name, except there's one name I'll share with you because the name itself will help you understand the teacher. But I'm interested in the next question. What qualities were instrumental in the piquing of your interest to learn and even excel? Think back. Elementary, junior high school, college. You think of a teacher motivated you. What qualities motivated you? Any responses? Yes, sir.
Now, when I think back to my high school days, there were two or three. I couldn't tell you what they taught me, but I can tell you they had an interest in me. They invested themselves in me. I remember their character and their involvement in wanting to help me. That's what I remember.
I think we heard last session. You care. You love. Want them to excel. Someone else. Yes.
I'm a biology teacher.
What qualities?
To work hard and do it right the first time.
How did they do that? How did they motivate you to work hard? kind of, okay, so there was some rapport there. You wanted to excel. You wanted them to be pleased with how you did. Someone else? Yes, sir.
I am. In high school, I was involved in music, so Lamar Runestad training. When I was at a big school, my graduating class was over 900. In our school, it was over 5,000. But Lamar Runestad, Mary Miller, an English teacher, who was tough and wouldn't accept second-rate work, and a biology teacher named David Anderson, who was a creationist, but he taught both sides of the coin because he had to, but he taught creationism as fact and evolution as theory.
I had a science teacher, said, I was in public high school, said, confessed. He said, I think more of my ancestors swung by their necks than they're not to think about. I had a third grade teacher. Her name was Miss. I was sick more that year than all of the other fever. My mom got smart after a while. She'd take my temperature. I could work one up. I'm not good. She said, yeah, I guess you do have a fever. And then about 30 minutes after the bus left, you know, I was well. But we were out in the farm, out in the country. Mom's not going to get me to school. But it was a rough year. I dreaded going to her class. She was harsh. She wasn't understanding. Now, I probably didn't deserve understanding and love and kindness. But my second grade teacher and I did well. In fact, she was a Christian. She'd lead us in prayer every lunch period. Her name was Mrs. Coogan, and I didn't make fun of her name. And I hunted her up years later and just reminisced a little bit, thanked her for being my second grade teacher and leading us in prayer. Any other teachers? What do you remember and why?
Well, I just want to mention that I think people know Pastor Paul Chappell at Lancaster Bible Church. My brother Bill, his wife Ellie, was Paul's third grade teacher. And his mother would always say, How's Paul doing? And she'd say, he's doing just fine. But I just thought it was a
connection. That's great. That's great. Yes, sir.
I had a teacher in Tennessee Temple my second year there in Greek, David Wisdom. That name was, he pastored out here a while up our way in Grandview area. Tough Greek teacher. I mean, memorized. It taught me so much in one semester. I left school. Long story, I left school after that. But when I came back to another Bible college, I could take the full 2 years of Greek without even cracking the book for everything I learned from one semester from David Wisdom.
Isn't it true that a lot of times teachers are motivating in ways that you have a hard time putting your finger on? And you have to think about it. But there's something about that teacher. I didn't know after high school what I was going to do. I thought I'd be a missionary pilot. So I went to a community college, went through all the basic flight training, all the way up through flight instructor. One of the requirements my freshman year was, and this was a quarter system rather than a semester system, it all works out in the end, but physical science, astronomy, and chemistry. And I didn't particularly do well in my high school science just because I wasn't ever interested in it. I got into that chemistry class, and something about that teacher, just, I thought about it a lot. I got interested. I got motivated. In fact, my second year there, he came to me and he said, you know, we're offering a special 5-quarter-hour research chemistry course as an elective. I said, I'm in. And there was 4 or 5 of us in there, and I had to take 25 credit hours that quarter to graduate in the 2 years, in addition to the flight training. He gave us a test tube with a handful of elements in it that was part of a compound within a liquid and a book, and he said, here's the course. This book will lead you through test after test after test after test on this liquid in this test tube, and by the time you get finished with the book, you'll know what the elements were. Now, if you make a mistake, it's an A or an F. And he was open to questions. You make a mistake, you're going to be in trouble. So I'm thinking of Isaiah 50, verse 4. He wakeneth mine ear to hear as the learned. You have to, how do we help young folks decide they want to hear? They want to learn. Well, comments on the introduction there. Sometimes when you're in leadership, you inherit things that fill holes. I inherited a JV basketball coaching assignment. And last year was great. We went undefeated because I inherited a lot of good guys. It wasn't me. I just had some great guys. This year, I'm looking at third and fourth graders to try see if I can come up with somebody that can run up and down the court and dribble and make a layup. But you know what they want to do? You get out there and practice, and you let them warm up just a little bit. You know what they want to do? They want to shoot threes. And here's this little guy, and I like little guys. There's this little guy, and he's going, and the thing gets about halfway from here to the basket. I say, listen, start close. Yeah, but these bigger guys. I said, listen, you'll mature, you'll get older. I got to sell this little guy on starting where he can be successful. I say, listen, I said, there's only one guy on this whole team that I will even let shoot a three-point in a game. Why is that? Because I kept stats on these guys. And I had one guy last year. I don't know if you remember. One guy last year, he was a pretty good athlete as a ninth grader, and he wanted to shoot threes all the time. And I had somebody keeping stats on him, and I showed him his stats after the first game. I said, look. I said, your percentage is, well, it stinks. I mean, you know, how do you say it tactfully? Only shoot a three if you're really open, or I yell at you to do it. You know, we're down by two. There's 10 seconds in the game, and we need a three. You got to sell these kids. Okay, here's the limitation, but there's hope for you. Well, practice, practice, practice. I had a drafting teacher that was organized, precise. This was before CAD was even thought of. Somehow he sold me on, my handwriting is really good, isn't it? I'm not getting an affirmative. But he got me to the point where it was totally legible because you had to print everything on these drafting papers. 1 year of high school drafting, toward the end of the year, he said, why don't you sit for the civil service exam for the city of Hillsboro? I wasn't sure exactly what I was going to do. I had Boeing in the back of my mind, but I was thinking about missionary aviation. I said, well, sure. I sat for that civil service exam, and with the Lord's help, I came in second out of a group of a dozen or so. That was to the teacher's credit. He really taught us well. Well, a lady came in first. She had 3 years of experience out in the field, so she got the job with Hillsboro. Well, by the time I decided that I was going to go on to flight school, Hillsboro called me up and said, we've got another opening. Do you want to come? Well, the Lord has ways of shutting doors, keeping you from going down the road that he doesn't want you to go. But I think of that drafting teacher. I think of the FFA teacher, Future Farmers of America. We built hay elevators. We built tilt bed implement trailer in the shop. I'm talking junior, senior high. We did all these things. He was a motivator. How is it that teachers motivate? Well, let me go down to this comment that says, Jesus taught as they were able to hear it. He started where they were. Coach Griffin knows when you're coaching basketball, they want to turn a simple layup into some kind of a fancy, crowd-pleasing shot that just drives a coach out of his mind. Stay to the basics. You know, go up high. They want to do all this, you know. And some of them get pretty good at it. But in the long run, they're not going to be nearly the player, especially when you say, okay, you did that right-handed, now do it left-handed.
There you go.
Then they start to get it. Oh, okay. Which, let's see. How's this? I say, listen, practice this at home. Do one of these. You know, go to dinner, you know, at home. You know, press your mom. She's going to go, what on earth? So, well, I'm working on my basic technique for layups. Well, you sell these kids on it. Whatever your age level, whatever your course. Jesus taught us that they were able to hear it. Turn, if you would, to Mark 4:33, because I think of a phrase in that verse very frequently. It says, with many such parables spake he the word unto them, he, Jesus, as they were able to hear it. Get to know your students. Had a boy in geography years ago, just not doing well at all. And I learned very quickly, do not set up your classroom seating chart alphabetically. There's no reason to do that. You need certain people in certain places. And Matthew needed to be right about where Brother Hansen is. I mean, you know, right where my right hand could get to him. And, you know, I never abused him. It's amazing what just a little hand on the shoulder will do. You know? Or, Brother Griffin, how you doing? You know, you're looking good today. Got your tie, you know, look, hey, good. Man, he'd sit up a little straighter. He'd work a little harder. Then my wife and I went and made a visit to the home. Why his single mom, why his mom had him in the Christian school, I'll never know. Because when I got to the home, we found out she was a woman of the streets. That gave me a whole new perspective on Matthew. Man, every time I'd see Matthew, you know, pray for him. Lord, help this boy. By the end of the year, this kid got so motivated, it was just a joy to have him there. Because as teachers, they respond to that. Remember, there is hope for them. I ran across a video one time. I'll give you the. I think her name is the name of the video. Temple Grandin. How many of you have heard of her? Temple Grandin. She's what you'd call quite autistic growing up. She and autism has many forms. And sometimes we want to lump them all in the same box and treat them all the same way. She saw some cattle one day being herded into a pen, and she got this idea that if she could find an empty pen, P-E-N, and get herself in this pen and close the head gate around her, it gave her a sense of security. It's not a Christian type DVD, but it tells the story of someone who invested in her, helped her to come to understand herself. I think she actually ended up with an earned PhD, if I'm remembering, and went on to work for one of the universities in the research department and had a lot to do with how cows and livestock do better when they're run through the vats that do deworming for sheep. I don't know what they do for cattle, but just an amazing lady with some really serious, abnormal needs. Showed it to our faculty one time, and when we concluded, I said to them, listen, you could have a Temple Grandin in your class and not even know it. There are needs. Sometimes they're emotional. Sometimes they're unseen. You know, you've got to be looking for it. And it's hard when you feel like you don't have time. But what if that were my son? What if that were my daughter? And then God's given us a grandchild that's probably a little bit autistic. I thought, wow, I sure hope someone invests in them. Because we reap what we sow. I feel like I'm kind of repeating some ground here, but they should know you truly care. Show personal interest without becoming a buddy. Go the second mile without spoiling them. And when I say spoiling them, have you ever had a student say, hey, what can I do for extra credit? Ever had that question? And you're thinking to yourself, if you spend as much time asking me for extra credit and doing extra credit, if you just do your original homework, you wouldn't need any extra credit. So you got to sell them on that, right? Because some teacher spoiled them maybe before you. Well, I'd be lazy and make it up with some extra credit. I love this illustration, by the way, on helping them know you truly care. Dr. Ardell Jacquot, we had him as our conference keynote speaker twice over the years. It's been some time. I believe he's passed away now. But he wrote a book entitled, I didn't write the title down. A Guide to Success. I wrote it in your notes, didn't I? A Guide to Successful Christian Teaching. Here's the illustration on page 125. A John Hopkins professor by the name of Holmes gave a group of graduate students an assignment. Go to the slums, take 200 boys between the ages of 12 and 16, investigate their background and environment, then predict their chances for the future. The students, after consulting social statistics, talking to the boys, compiling as much data as they could, made this conclusion from the research. We predict 90% of the boys would spend some time in a penitentiary. 25 years later, another group of graduate students was given the job of checking out that prediction. They went back to the slum area. Some of the boys were still there. Some they had to find. A few had died. Some had moved away. But they got in touch with 180 of the original 200. Now, 25 years later, that's pretty amazing. Here's what they found. Only 4 of the group had ever served time. What was the prediction? 90%. 4 out of 180. It's a low percentage. Now, if you're in Algebra 1, we'd go ahead and figure that out real quick. Not to digress from the illustration here, they pressed further in their questioning of these boys and found out that in 75% of these 180 cases, out of which only 4 spent some time, you know, there was a woman, a teacher. They hunted up the teacher. She was now living in a home for retired teachers. How was it she had exerted this remarkable influence on a group of boys from a slum area? Did she have any thoughts as to why these boys might turn out the way they did? No, she said, no, I really don't know. And then musingly, more to herself than to the questioner, she said, I love those boys. Something about her loving those boys caught hold. She instilled in them a sense of purpose and goals and vision and made a difference. Be encouraging, even though disciplining. I've tried this over the years. There's plenty of discipline opportunities. You don't have to look for them. They'll come. You got to deal with it. But I always tried to do this. You know, whether it's church or school, you deal with something that's negative, find a way later on, put it behind you, and greet them as if it didn't happen. Be positive. You know, we want to cold shoulder them for a couple of weeks, you know, see if they're really going to shape up and do right. That's not going to be helpful to them. They should know you want to prepare them for success. Now, we know we have to define what success is, spiritually, but mentally, academically, emotionally. I never forget the wisdom God gave Dr. Joel Mullenix one time. We were in a D.C. committee students would come in with infractions that they had committed, and I was dealing with my particular college student, and I kind of noticed a kind of an unusual situation taking place. And this young lady had come over to Dr. Mullinex, and he was saying, well, I noticed you have this demerit slip for such and such, and it was for this cause, and what do you have to say? And she fainted. She just collapsed right on the floor. Well, I was glad I didn't have that one. But he got up out of his chair, and he said, get up! And she got up. She was pretending a faint. I don't know how he discerned that. The fellow that she was engaged to said, I'm not marrying you. And he broke off the engagement. He said, you've got some rebuilding to do. By the way, there's a good end to that story. She did rebuild. Somebody drew alongside, helped her to get some things worked out, and they got married, and I'm assuming they're living happily ever after. Takes wisdom. Lord, help me. Give me some insight into this young one. We have a student in our school this year. When her mom came to interview, she said, my son has been in the public school and he's been bullied. And when I met the boy, he was, it's like maybe like Brother Haynes. I mean, he's seventh grade and probably just about that tall and about that big. And I thought, why would he get bullied? I can understand me getting bullied, but him? But they'd pick on him. He's a little slower. She said, he hates going to school every day. He had some kids evidently were picking on him. He's been coming to school. He likes coming to school. Amen. Our kids don't pick on him. In fact, he turned out for basketball, and I heard a couple of our guys saying, second practice, hey, and Blake is as uncoordinated a guy as you'd ever want to meet. Please don't pick on us when we play you too bad. Okay, just go easy on us. This kid, I mean, if he can dribble three successive times in a row without the ball scooting somewhere, he has made progress. Well, I heard one of our kids say, hey, good job, Blake. And I looked around to see what he was doing, and I think it was progress. But I thought, there's a young person investing in another young person. He's not picking on him. I saw his mom the other day, and she said, hey, he's enjoying it. Yeah. In fact, he came up to me after a practice recently, and he said, how am I doing, coach? And I'm thinking real quick. Found something positive to say. Hey, like your attitude. You're trying. You're listening. You're working at it. He even tried a left-hand layup with the correct foot on the ground. That's progress. You know, these kids. So Jesus spake to them as they're able to hear it because he too wanted people to be successful. What do you think about this statement? Maybe you've heard it. Well, I lay it out for them. They just have to step up and do the work. That's one of those yes and no's. Yes, they have some personal responsibility, but sometimes as teachers, we lay it out there and we don't draw alongside and encourage them to step up. I had a boy a year or two ago, he came to Algebra 1, kind of a chip on his shoulder, first year in our school, and I thought, gotta win this boy. And found ways to kind of, and he's a pretty smart kid, found ways to try to motivate him. One day I said to him, Paul, maybe God will have you write a math book someday. Something about that statement evidently got a hold of him. I didn't know it at the time. We found out a couple months later when a family member came to our principal and said, we think Paul is is exceptionally gifted in math. Can we get him into an advanced math class? The principal came to me and said, what do you think? I said, well, between us, he's smart, but he's not one of these gifted off the chart kids. He's just working up to his potential, and his family thinks, you know, I sold him too well is kind of what happened. I got to be careful with that. No. Well, every teacher, I'm down to positive methods and strategies. Every teacher is a bit of an actor. So you're all using your invisible cover sheets, right? You're not jumping too far ahead of me. Positive methods and strategies. Keep things moving. Only take planned rabbit trails. Have clear-cut goals in mind. Find ways to engender interest. By the way, admit when you make a mistake. They love to find mistakes when you're helping them work a problem on the board. You know, I don't let it bother me. Now, I don't pretend I didn't make it. I don't say, just testing you. See if he's going to catch it. Now, once in a while, I'll do that on purpose, and I'll tell him, hey, I made a mistake there on purpose. Where is it? Find it. You know? Have clear-cut expectations. Involve students where you can. I had two twin sisters in Algebra 1, and they're also playing volleyball. And it's something, they were kind of clicking with algebra. I said, listen, this isn't exactly algebra, but you're at the games watching the fellas play just as they watched you. How would you like to keep some stats for me? And they come, they sit there. It's kind of odd having some, I don't know if you noticed the girls sitting on our boys' JV basketball bench, but they're keeping stats. And they're learning and they're growing. And hey, get them involved every way that you can. Commend accomplishment. Years ago, a pastor said to me, how'd you like to climb Mount St. Helens? I didn't know what I was in for. We start at 3,300 feet, climber's bivouac. You go 5 miles each way, 5,000 foot of altitude. First 2 miles are not too bad, just a nice grim climb up through the trees. Then you hit the rocks. Climb the south face of Mount St. Helens. I came back praying as I'd never prayed before for the rapture. Lord, I'm this far up. I don't know if I can get down. I don't know if I can get up. But I got so sold on that climb. I said, we're going to make this an annual activity. And I've probably been up a dozen or more times. And had this group of junior high girls one time. I said, we're going to make it. Going to make it. Well, I had to prove to them that we were going to make it when I ended up with one girl's pack on this arm, one on this arm, one in the front, my own on the back. And we're the last 1,000 foot up through the ash, we're going to make it. Right in then, we decided we're going to commit. I said, you have done a great job. There's very few people, percentage-wise, that are going to climb south face of Mount St. Helens. Now, it's not technical, but it is very grim. That's 10 miles. So we used one of the gifts of one of our staff. We designed a T-shirt that we give to them. Says, I climbed what was left of Mount St. Helens. And there's a little outline and the elevations. It's kind of cool. You know? Commend accomplishment. Things that can kill a learning spirit in your classroom. Aloofness. Not being able to be touched. Being condescending, looking down. I'm the teacher. Harshness. Sometimes we're harsher than the offense warrants. Sometimes we're too easy. But consistency will help us with that. Another thing that can kill a learning spirit in your classroom, never admitting we are wrong. I had to borrow your phrase, Dr. Rasmussen, a do-over. I was 23. I served under Dr. Mullinex my third year there at Nampa Christian High School in Nampa, Idaho. he asked me to be the principal. I said, man, I'm 23. What am I doing as a principal? I found this. I could win the kids. It's the parents I had trouble with. That kind of led me into the ministry eventually. We got to get the whole family here. But I'll never forget one boy threw a, there was an errant snowball, I think, at a teacher. And I came down on him and I said something I regret to this day. I said, I expect better of you out of you being a pastor's son. Oh! You know, I kind of agonized over that over the years. I met him 20-some years later. You know what my first thought was? I got to go apologize to that boy. And I did. Went over to him. Hey, remember that snowball incident? Yeah, he remembered it. They never forget. I said, I owe you an apology. Would you forgive me for... I came on way too hard. And especially expecting more out of you as a pastor's son than anybody else. That's a terrible thing to do to pastor's kids. Now, yeah, there's a leadership expectation. You know what he said? He said, I've been wanting to meet you. I thought, oh, no. He said, I want to thank you for doing that. That was a wake-up call. Now, what happened there? I did wrong. God gave him grace. He received the grace. God did good things in his life, and he was ahead for it. No thanks to me. Wow. Thank the Lord for grace. Admit when we're wrong. I think we're out of time here. Let me close with one verse. Teach them that God is pulling for us. Psalm 56, 9b. This I know, for God is for me. I love that. That's become real to me in the last 6 months. This I know, for God is for me. Lord, thank you that you want good for us. You want to help us to serve you. Make us ever better teachers. In Jesus' name, amen.